Yeah.
So there would be subsequent action beyond here. So, but if it's clear from a legally binding perspective, then I'll abstain from that.
Okay. And with that, Jill, can you provide us with roll call?
Member Waggy?
Here.
Chairperson Ogren?
Here.
Member Talley?
That's right, and I'm here.
Member Gehring?
I'm here.
And we'll show that others didn't make it, or when they do, we'll add them. This is the time for any members of the public who might want to comment on items that are not on the agenda. 1, 2, 3, and seeing none, we'll move on to the next item. Approval of meeting minutes for November 17, 2015. Any questions out of committee members?
Just a minor typo. Role is spelled R-O-L-L rather than R-O-L-E.
On that first paragraph.
First paragraph, very minor.
Any members of the public wanting to comment on the minutes? And seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
I move approval.
Any second?
I will go ahead and make the second, even though I was not at the meeting, but I checked in with Farda Ketta, and he agreed that the minutes look good.
Very good. So with the second, with the motion and a second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Hearing I got none. Abstain. It doesn't show me here, so.
Okay. Well, so I believe it still passed based on a majority of those who are in
That's
attendance
right.
here, so. The next item, 4, then, is operations report, and that will be provided by?
Jill Ogren, County Public Works. As of January 21st, 2016, the lake elevation was 466.74. That is the same as the storage, which is 14,159 acre feet. That puts us at a 29% capacity. Rainfall to date is 11.62 inches. To date, since January, we've had 5.31 inches. Plant production, 2.9 million gallons per day. Downstream releases were 1.8 million gallons per day, and state water is at 1.1 million gallons per day.
And this, what you handed out, is an addendum to that operations report, or is that, that's under a future informational item, right?
That is something that we normally
so
give you every 3 months. It's
okay.
Yes.
Any questions on the operations report?
On that chart that was handed out, you know, it doesn't look like the lake's responding according to the sawtooth, the green sawtooth. Even
yes.
though we had, what was that, 2.86 in December, we didn't see the rise we would expect, did we?
Right.
So do we need to adjust that prediction so that it fits reality more closely, maybe?
I would recommend that. You know, based on some of my historical discussions with Clint Milne, who had tracked a lot of data associated with Lopez. I just remember the conversation where after a dry year, Lopez is really slow to respond on inflow. You know, probably characteristics of the watershed and how long it takes to get
right.
saturated. So, Jill, I think the thing that might be looked at is to try to refine the data set and look at how the dam is responding in years that were after a dry or a couple of dry years. And see if we can get that refined a little bit, because just based on those historical discussions I had, I'm not surprised to see relatively small inflow at this point in time. And if we could also, for the record, make sure that Mr. Hill with Arroyo Grande is now in attendance.
Okay.
Jim, there's two members, yourself and Jeff Lee, who have not yet been appointed by the Board of Supervisors. So, you know, participating in everything is good, but when it comes to the formal vote, in order to make sure we're complying with the Brown Act and the Matty Act and everything. Jeff is going to abstain, and probably would be wise for you to do so, unless you were the alternate last year.
I'm the appointed alternate for
this year. Yeah.
This year.
Yeah. So there still has to be some more formal board approvals in order to make sure we're complying with the Matty Act or the Brown Act, whichever the case may be. But in any case, the record has Mr. Hill here now. Thank you for being here. And we just got it started with the agenda. Okay, so we'll see if that analysis on reservoir response can get refined a little bit. Any other comments on operations report? Any members of the public? Been seeing none since it's not an action item. We'll move on to item 5, information items. And the first one, I believe, is Ms. Hilker on the distribution of the proposed budget for 2016-17. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Joanne Hilker from the County Public Works Finance Division, and tonight I am distributing the fiscal year 2016-17 proposed budget for Flood Control Zone 3. In terms of distribution, I have mailed these budget books to the Zone 3 Finance Committee, and they're going to distribute the hard copies to their staffs and the respective city managers. Also early next week, everyone on the Zone 3 contact list, which includes the advisory committee, the alternates, the TAC, the alternates, everyone will receive a PDF version of this. So I'll come hand these out.
Just one.
Two, yeah.
One is good for me, thank you.
Just one, yeah. Thank you.
So just as a brief reminder, our annual review process for the Zone 3 budget is as follows. The TAC has already met a couple times to discuss and finalize the capital outlay section of the budget. On February 4th, the TAC will receive the budget books at their meeting and have another opportunity to discuss it. On February 17th, Public Works meets with the Zone 3 Finance Committee to review the proposed budget, and I would encourage you all to meet with your Finance Committee members to discuss any questions or issues and bring those to that meeting. And then on March 19th, I'll be back here at the Advisory Committee meeting to give you a brief presentation of the budget and then ask for your committee's endorsement of the budget. After it's approved by your committee, the Zone 3 budget will go to our County Board of Supervisors in mid-June for adoption. And just a couple very brief notes on this budget. It reflects an overall increase of 3% to the billings to the agencies, 3% increase for the billings to your agencies. Much of the proposed increase is due to a Thule removal project at the Terminal Dam and also increases in work by our Utilities Division related to the drought and also responding to various requests by your agencies throughout the year. Routine operation maintenance budgets are up about 5.7%, but offset by some reductions in non-routine O&M. And the capital outlay billings are budgeted at the customary $550,000 level. So with that, I will see you back here in March for my presentation.
Any questions of Ms. Hilker at this time? I just had quick to confirm the February date of the finance officers.
17.
Okay, so
that's at Pismo Beach at 2:00.
All right. So any questions that we might have in advance of that meeting, even for the finance directors, would be appropriate.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned that the TAC has met on the CIP program, and do you know if they have developed a recommendation in support, or are they still evaluating it?
Sure.
On the tax review of the CIP program, do we know if the TAC is supporting it, or are they still under review?
They are supporting it.
Okay.
They are supporting it.
Thank you. And I have no further questions. Mr. Gehring?
Just one, and that would be, if you look on the agenda under item 8B, is that somewhere in this budget?
There is. I was looking at the current year budget. In the proposed budget, I can point to really quickly because I'm sure the formatting. On page I-4, kind of right up in the preamble, it talks about district-funded reserves and the reserve policies. And the district-funded reserves are those that were derived from pre-2000 property tax revenues. And so under when we get to 8B, that's the reserves that are going to be discussed. And then I believe that there was a schedule that showed reserve balances. Joanne?
Yeah.
I don't know if it was changed or not.
No.
In the prior years, I found a schedule that had identified the dollar amount of the flood control district's funded reserves.
Page 8 and 9 and 10.
For the current one that you just handed out?
Yeah, so, yeah, page 8. So that's the projected reserves for Zone 3 at the end of the 16-17 year would be $2.9 million.
Okay.
It's column G.
Because under
that does not include this $30,000 proposed project.
Right. So the district-funded reserves out of those pre-2000 property tax revenues, I guess, are part of it is designated an operating reserve, and then part of it is designated for other purposes. But in total,
yes,
it's approximately $2.9 million.
Yes.
So, any other questions?
Thank you.
And thank you, Joanne.
Okay.
Moving on then to 5B, climate update.
So in your packet, you would have received some handouts there related to the temperatures and the that are predicted. Andrea put this together, and in reviewing it, the difference between in November when your group met regarding temperature forecasts, they're now we're at normal temperatures is what they're predicting. As far as precipitation, we've moved from. In November, we had equal chances of having above and below average precipitation. We've now moved to normal or possibly below because we have not seen quite the rainfall that we thought we would see already here in January. They're predicting that it's going to happen in the months of February and March. So that's why we really haven't moved up into the above yet on those charts on the handout you have in front of you.
Any questions on the climate update?
I just had a comment. You know, we've heard over and over about this El Nino year. We've heard over and over about this El Nino year and how much rain we're going to get. And hopefully we're going to get some more rain. But I live up at the near the headwaters of the Rio Grande Creek. And in 98, this time of year, which was a big El Nino year, I had more than 30 inches of rain at my place. And this year I've got less than 13. So it's of some concern that while the El Nino water temperatures exist, maybe the rainfall patterns are not developing. So.
And I share that concern. I know that John Lindsay at some point in time had indicated that the Central Coast may not get, you know, the big rainfall event. Any other questions or comments?
We're just going to comment on the, since some of us are part of the state water project, and we get our water state water project, I noticed that the Feather River watershed has been getting quite a bit of rain.
Yeah.
One 5-day period, they had something like 3 to 13 inches of rain in the watershed. So Orville Dam is starting to fill up, although it's still a long ways to go. I'm just looking at down the road planning. I'm sure staff is looking at ways to make sure we can get through another year if we don't get a lot more local rain.
On the bright side, we're supposed to get a half an inch to an inch of rain tomorrow.
Let's hope.
5C, then, projected reservoir levels. think we touched on that during the operations report. So if there's any further questions or comments.
Just as a, I can kind of point out a couple little things. Between December 31st and today, we've had an increase of 312 acre feet in the reservoir. And the reservoir went up about 9 inches, and we've had about a 1% increase in capacity.
So let's keep rooting that reservoir on. Next is PG&E Diablo Canyon Power Plant Desalination Update.
I don't have any more of an update than what was provided in your packet. I believe that we have a discussion set for February 23rd in front of the Board of Supervisors. However, it may be end up being a brief discussion because they're still working with PG&E and looking into things, I believe. Mark may know a little bit more about this, but
I can cover that in two items from now.
Very good. So Mr. Waddell, the utilities project manager, provided a written report, and I guess if there's any other questions or comments on that, this would be a good time.
Just a quick comment from myself and the fact that I'd like to have Grover Beach included in the all of the agencies. Stipulation?
Oh, just I see just that. Bullet point number three.
One of those little logistical cleanup items.
Because Grover Beach did respond?
We did. Yes, we did.
Okay.
Supportively.
Good. Sounds like all the agencies have responded in support then.
Question?
Yes.
Has PG&E given us any indication of what their cost of the water to us would be at the plant?
Mr. Hutchinson.
Yes, great question. Mark Hutchinson, County Public Works Deputy Director. PG&E figures their costs, I'm going to get this number wrong, right, just a tad over $1,000 an acre foot. I think the number is $1,010. County Flood Control District has an existing contract with PG&E to purchase that water at their desal plant. Should we manage to get a truck past security, we could fill it up today. We don't have a solid indication of whether that price would hold for a long-term project. And we know that PG&E is working with their vendor. They contract for the desal plant. That contract is ending. So part of the reason we're not at the board this month with a comprehensive update is because PG&E is working internally to figure out what the scope of a new contract for that desal plant is going to be. We have obviously this project and the emergency component, the long-term component, and then PG&E is looking at potential upgrades to some of their emergency water supply systems using an expanded plant as well. And so they're working to try to figure out how those things mesh. But right now the price is, and we believe it's close to what it costs them to produce the water, right at $1,000 an acre foot.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
I just had an unrelated question about what time that Board of Supervisors meeting on February 23rd is going to be. Is it morning or afternoon?
We don't know yet.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we won't know until about 6 calendar days before the meeting when the agenda is published.
Thank you.
Mark, can we make sure to have something distributed to all the Zone 3 Advisory Committee members regarding that, since it's not going to be part of a normal agenda distribution? Just some sort of a notice, maybe a staff report attached?
Certainly. We'll do that or give you the quick link to where it's posted.
Yeah, something. Thank you. The next item, informational item, is on stormwater resource grants. And Nicole Smith with the San Luis Coastal Resource Conservation District here is here to provide us with a presentation.
Where, do you want to go down? That one? There you go. No, you can just sit right here. Okay.
Hello, my name is Nicole Smith, and I am with the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District. We are a special district in primarily the South County area of our county. From this picture, you can see we cover from Highway 41 south to Santa Maria River and then over to the grade. And our district is tasked with thinking about conservation issues, natural resource issues, everything from soil conservation, erosion control, water quality, wildlife habitat. And today what we're going to talk about a little is stormwater. Over the years, we have completed many stormwater projects in your cities and in the county. Some of those include sediment detention basins on agricultural lands that then move that storm water to the creek with less sediment in it, and so improving the water quality as it moves to the creek and taking that sediment out before it reaches an area like the flood control district of Zone 11A downstream. We've also been involved in some of the planning tasks in Arroyo Grande Creek watershed, looking upstream of the flood, the Zone 11A flood control district, and looking at sediment detention, flood attenuation basins upstream of that area, just to enhance the projects that the county is working on in that area. So we do larger projects like that, but we also work with individual landowners inside cities on projects to complete low-impact development. So when someone wants to put in a rain barrel, currently we have a rebate where people can install rain barrels, which are water conservation, of course, practices. We also encourage creating depressions on their property, something that's called a rain garden, where the rainwater from their property actually is detained there as opposed to running off. And all of these tasks or all these, you know, practices are rehydrating our soils, ideally getting into our groundwater and making our water quality better. And so all those projects, we do them based on grant money. So late last year, we were kind of looking at some of the grants coming through the Prop 1 and realized that there's these new requirements put out through the Senate Bill 985, which requires that any stormwater or dry weather runoff capture project must be identified in a stormwater resource plan. And this is a relatively new requirement. And as we are looking at what that means, you can see here on the screen what the very basic pieces of that plan would be. We don't believe that anyone in our county likely has this. It's, you know, if you looked at a subset, maybe, you know, a single city here and there may be able to meet some of these. But I think the ones that are most challenging are actually having quantified the benefits of stormwater projects. And so if you have retention basin, sediment, or other stormwater infrastructure in your cities and plans to put in more, you have to have quantified the benefits of those and then actually prioritized which of those, you know, rises to the top, has the most benefits and is the most cost effective, and then the state will look at that and say, yes, we think that you are eligible for state bond funding, and in a competition with everyone else in the state, we're going to award you this grant. And so we at the RCD found this very challenging because, again, we are grant funded, and we want to make sure that our area has a fair chance of getting state bond funds when it comes to recharging our groundwater basins and dealing with stormwater and flood flow. And so this is really the first step, is creating the stormwater resource plan. And so we started looking at it as really an opportunity. I think in the Arroyo Grande watershed and Pismo Creek watersheds in particular, a very big opportunity because of all the existing work that has already been completed. And so completing a stormwater management plan could just be an exercise of kind of linking those previous plans together and expanding on them and making them a little stronger. This, of course, is a list that's, you know, could be expanded on for many, many slides. But I think the point is it could be an opportunity for an area like Zone 3 to start thinking about, well, where are our stormwater priorities and who's actually going to fund those? And if we want to get them in the ground more quickly, state bond funding may be an opportunity to do that. This is just a map of potential recharge areas. It happens to be the Edna Valley Basin, but we were involved in this mapping effort with a consultant, and we would like to continue this type of effort in the Rio Grande watershed and using stormwater to infiltrate our groundwater basins on both public lands and private lands. There's some specific projects on agricultural lands that the RCD is interested in, but there are many more opportunities. There's also an opportunity to meet some of the city's NPDES stormwater requirements through this plan development. And so my understanding is there are some new phase two requirements just for the urban areas, and that this plan could be a way to meet those requirements. And then, of course, looking at state bond funds is a way to make your dollar go farther. And so for any dollar that, you know, locally is coming from a citizen's pocket to go into a project, if you're able to bring state bond funds to the picture, it just makes your dollar go a little bit farther. And the way that works best in grants is partnering. In order to be competitive, you really need to partner with other agencies and organizations because you are competing at the state level. And so I'm going around kind of informing the county and other cities in our district of this grant that's coming, or it is open right now. It is a Prop 1 stormwater grant. It's through the Water Resource Control Board, and it will fund planning and implementation grants. The solicitation is open, and so the final application would be due in the beginning of March. And this grant could fund some of the projects that I'm talking about, and it could probably fund, you know, other needs that you have in mind. There are two grant rounds. The first one is open now. The second one will open in 2018. And so if the county or other entities in our county put in an application in round one to do planning, you could set up your application or your plan in such a way that you'd be eligible for implementation funding in 2018. But planning, which is getting to that stormwater resource plan, is only eligible in this first round. And so if this grant is not used to develop a stormwater resource plan, then that's something that, you know, you as individual cities or maybe as Zone 3 may need to do down the road as projects come along. So this is just one grant opportunity that could start that process of actually creating a stormwater resource plan. This is just a little bit of the background. There is $50,000 to $500,000 available for planning. There's also a 50% cost match. which just means that local or federal funds need to be brought to the table in order to be eligible for the grant. And that the priority for the state is to have regional collaborations. And so groups like Zone 3 or the Five Cities area would have a much more competitive grant rather than individual cities going it alone. And then there's also priority given to economically disadvantaged areas, which Grover Beach is partly, and Oceano is partly. So that could also kind of work to your advantage. So I just wanted to kind of let you know that that grant is in the process of, or it is open. The RCD is looking for partners. We're very interested in working on a stormwater resource plan for our area. And we're starting to dig into the details of what is eligible and who our partners may be. And that's it.
Any questions, comments?
I had a question. We have an item 8B on our agenda to look at some work done on in Carpenter Canyon Creek stormwater issue. And one possibility, I suppose, that I was going to mention during this item is to see if that water could be diverted to percolation pond or something to try to increase the groundwater. This grant money could be used potentially for something like that.
I believe so. And that the Meadow Creek area was one of those first things that came to mind because it seems to keep falling off the radar for whatever reason or people's lists. So I think that has some potential.
Okay, I appreciate that. And what's the web page for the Resource Conservation District?
It's Coastal.
I assume you have all that information on the web page too.
We don't have the grant information on the web page. No, that would be on the State Water Board's website.
And then what's your web page?
So our web page is the coastalrcd.org.
Okay. And then the rebate information for people that want to do stormwater and projects on their own individual properties.
On their own individual properties. So that's only eligible right now in Arroyo Grande, Napomo, and San Luis Obispo. We would love to expand it to other areas. And that's, one of the other reasons we can't expand that with state grants without this plan either.
I assume these would be larger properties rather than individual small city lots, residential lots.
I think the larger properties would probably fit this plan better.
Okay. That's my understanding.
What we're currently doing is smaller properties, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jeff? I had a question on that. How large, or how, for lack of a better term, robust does the stormwater resource plan need to be? For Grover, we have basically those, our flood control, and Mr. Gehring can expand upon this. We capture a lot of our stormwater on site already. So our development code probably could codify that resource plan. In essence, is that an adequate?
So on the water board site for this Prop 1 stormwater grant, they do have a self-certification form, and so you can go into the water code. They have it broken out for each of those sections I showed at the beginning, and you'd have to show how you met that requirement, and then have someone sign off on it saying that you indeed did.
Okay.
And I think that when you went to apply for state bond funding, you would then have to submit that self-certification form, and they'd probably check it at that time. I don't think they're checking it immediately after you sign.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Oh, the only comment is I doubt if our stormwater management plan has quantified the relative benefits of the various parts as yet. That would probably be the missing link, which would be fairly easy to do.
And that was, I think, some of the feedback that I met with Nicole and some of the staff with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And it was the quantification of some of these issues that they believed was sort of what is new elements of the stormwater resource plans. They also talked about MS4 permits for the municipalities on our stormwater systems. and discuss the fact that they want to see more of the quantification of the loading on the pollutants in order to comply, you know, with the new NPDES. So in some ways they're putting these grants out there as a carrot, and they've been doing work on the loading factors for the MS4s. But that's also an aspect that's sort of a new one that they're looking to have incorporated into these stormwater resource plans.
What is an MS4?
I'm not municipal system. It's a permitting on a number of different types of facilities.
Actually, MS4 is MSSSS, 4Ss, Municipal Separate Storm Sewer System.
Okay.
It comes from the East Coast. We call them storm drains. They call them storm sewers.
Okay.
So, like, part of the some of this grant money was explained to us was really focusing in the Los Angeles area, because Los Angeles has to do massive changes to their stormwater collection system, and, you know, the pollutants that are then getting pushed into the riverways. So anybody who has a direct discharge of their stormwater system into a surface water body can expect that the regional board is going to be looking at them a lot more closely in terms of what types of pollutants are getting carried into the natural waterways. You know, storm catchment basins our typical drainage basins where water goes in and then it perks and stuff are going to be, my understanding, a little bit less of the focus. It's these stormwater systems, again, that are directly discharging into rivers or other surface water bodies that are coming under increased scrutiny.
Just as a comment, it's interesting. The concept actually comes out of the California Water Plan, which was adopted about a year ago, or the latest version. And Pavel's reference to Los Angeles, the water plan has in its priority of new water sources for the state the capture and beneficial reuse of stormwater. And when you read the background of that, they were looking at the Los Angeles River, a concrete channel that captures all of this water from a desert area and pollutes it and then shoots it out into the ocean. So, you know, the water plan is a 20-year looking down the road. And somebody said, we really need to get working on trying to figure out if this resource could be put to beneficial use. And then legislation was passed implementing that. The hard part is that the regulations adopted by the State Water Resources Control Board came out this last December. So we're all scrambling a little bit, both to catch up with the regulations, meet these deadlines, and then translate the concept that has its roots in a massive, you know, 3 million population urban area into our communities and our cities. And it becomes a component of the urban stormwater permit, the MS4 NPDES permit that we all have. The regional boards also reached out to the county this week to talk about this. And there's some conversations that need to go on, which I'm certain over the next couple of weeks we're going to have, about how to work together to leverage staff, maybe, and expertise, and then deal with the situation. I think the regional board reached out to the county thinking, well, that's the big dog. The problem is the vast majority of the urban area, the MS4 permits, is in the 7 cities, not in the county area. For instance, in the South County, our coverage area under the MS4 is some fringe areas, Oceano being unincorporated, and some small fringe areas around the incorporated areas. So moving forward without the cities fully on board is not really in the cards. So this introduction to reach out to your councils is very much appropriate, and I'm sure the agencies are going to be having conversations. We do have a new water resources unit in Public Works that you've heard about, and we've shifted some of our grant-savvy folks over onto this issue to get up to speed as rapidly as we can. But great introduction and great opportunities, as well as a challenge to see how we can make this work.
I guess I'm kind of concerned about the grant aspect. If it's written for L.A. area, do we have a ghost of a chance of getting money locally here? I know a lot of the money's channeled to areas where it's low income and so forth. So we're kind of left high and dry sometimes.
I think there's a pretty good effort on the state's part to spread that funding around. And the regional board is, our local regional board is on the sort of the front wave of this, so there's a great support there.
Okay.
And a need for it. We obviously would have to work with the RCD and our staff and the regional board looking at all the guidelines and do an assessment of what our, how competitive we might be, but that's part of doing any of these grants.
Sure. And I assume the TAC then is looking at this, or some other group among our engineering and technical people.
I think this is probably the first introduction.
Okay.
This came to our attention this week.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So, yeah. And so towards that end, obviously March 4th is coming up very quickly. We're keeping our public works department busy on other things, as I'm sure everybody else is. So how can the cities help either the county or the RCD to put forth an application by March 4th that's going to be competitive?
I think the first part is that the technical folks in each of the cities likely will be contacted by the county as well as the RCDs and pointed to where those guidelines are, because they're the experts in what our individual urban stormwater plans actually say and what else each urban area might be able to reach out to pull together information for a comprehensive plan. So that's really the first step. Not that anybody's city staff has any time at all, but just another thing on the plate and something we need to spend a couple hours looking at. And then I'm sure Nicole would be open to groups of us getting together with them and crunching down in the details and seeing what we can do with this.
And just to continue on that, I guess we do have sort of a small working group that includes some of those water resource folks. We were hoping to get together next week and just start formulating, you know, a little bit of a vision of what are we talking about here, so that we could more easily bring that to the cities and get feedback.
Other questions or comments? I have a little bit of follow-up, because Jeff, I think you're astute in pointing out that timing is critical right now. Nicole contacted me about a week ago. We got together, and then I followed up with them with this meeting with the regional board. And so we're trying to coalesce a grant application team. My commitment to the group was by Monday, and based on the discussions we've had so far, I would develop a conceptual plan to the application process so that we can try to, you know, get our heads around how to approach it. Just put something down so that people can, you know, say we like these components and we don't like these components. But, you know, being able to establish the vision for the grant application itself has to happen really fast in order to hope to have the application done by the deadline. In addition, I had some brief discussions with a number of different individuals within Public Works. And in structuring the agenda today, you know, first want to make sure to thank Nicole for showing up and doing the overview presentation. But agenda item 8B was specifically structured to be more broad than just the specific project of funding the $30,000 for the Metal Creek Diversion Channel improvements. It reads, consideration of using Zone 3 reserves for drainage and flood control services, including that one item. So I think the follow-up during item 8B is whether or not some of those historical Zone 3s might be used to help with the funding match. But right now, Zone 3 only provides water service, you know, Lopez Dam, the treatment plant, and the distribution. So the advisory committee under protocol needs to first answer the question of, do we think the services of Zone 3 might be broader? And that's, again, 8B. We've got the specific item on Meadow Creek, and then we can follow up with some more discussions about this broader stormwater resource plan. And my final comment is, in reading through the grant application and the guidelines, very much clear what Mark and Nicole are saying is that the state is looking for a paradigm shift on stormwater. You know, it's called a stormwater resource plan because they want to move away from the history of considering stormwater as a nuisance and it needs to get out to the ocean as fast as possible, and instead look at it as a resource for multiple types of benefits, including groundwater recharge. So I'm looking forward to moving into item 8B when we get there and discussing this a little bit further and seeing what the pleasure of the advisory committee might be.
Curiosity question before we go further on that one. You said the paradigm shift for the state water board. So is that in alignment with the local water board? So with regards to that, it's a, I mean, it's, there's...
Yeah, the Regional Water Quality Control Board was definitely very supportive. And in fact, they have a consultant or some, Darlie English, who's worked a lot on low impact development and other types of programs. And so the regional board had indicated that they're willing to have some of the time that they're paying for to help in development of the application. Any other questions, comments, curiosities?
Actually, one last request of Nicole, actually. Is it possible to get a copy of your presentation? Only I'd like to send it to our city engineer, so when someone does call him, he'll not kind of have an inkling of what you're talking about.
Sure.
Thanks.
And, of course, for the entire committee.
Yes, we would request that as well. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nicole. And so that concluded our informational items. And as a matter of formality, any members of the public wanting to comment on them? And seeing none, we'll move on to item 6, capital projects update.
So
which
in your
previously had been provided by Mr. Lee, but I guess Mr. Lee now has a new assignment. Maybe you can speak to that real quick.
This might be a perfect opportunity to do that. Thank you. In approximately October, I moved out of the Utilities Division and into the Public Works Design Division, which absorbed architectural services from the old General Services, and I became the architectural services manager, which took me out of the utilities division, out of a conflict with Zone 3, which is why I get to, after board approval, sit on this side of the dais.
Well, good, and bring all of your years of experience and expertise as well. So that's good news. And now Ms. Ogren on the capital projects update.
Much to the chagrin of Ms. Ogren, by the way.
I would like to correct that Jeff abandoned us. A little bit more accurate.
Recharacterize that.
I try to smile at him at work occasionally, but... so as far as the capital projects update, the rack, the sixth rack addition, continues to move forward. They're in the process of building it. We are still hoping that it will actually be online sometime in March. The turnout SCADA project is still moving along. We've had a couple little more coordination than we had anticipated, and some of the turnouts where the SCADA is, we were needing to do some updates or upgrades to the turnouts themselves in order to accommodate our new SCADA. We still have, you know, various repair projects that were scheduled and budgeted for 15-16 but have not been started, so I don't have any update on those, except that under the water treatment plant intake repair, that is intended to be in coordination with the completion or the connection with the sixth rack. So when the plant is down for that, to make that connection will be a good opportunity for us to do the intake repair at that time. And probably the bigger news is that the water treatment plant parking lot resurfacing, which had been budgeted for 15-16, is now been deferred until 17-18. And that was simply because as part of the county's overall resurfacing projects, which the water treatment plant, which should have been included in, it sort of got missed. And as it turns out, it's actually going to be a good thing because with all the construction and various things going on, it's probably better to wait until the sixth rack is completed. So we will be doing that. We're scheduling that in 17-18, and we'll just simply roll over, or 16-17, and we'll just simply roll over the funds that were not spent this year into next year. Any questions?
Any questions? Seeing none. Any from the public? Seeing none. Move on to action item number 7, which is a habitat conservation plan update.
So That's me. Katie provided a pretty good staff report there. We had anticipated coming to the advisory committee tonight to present the downstream draft release or draft downstream release program, but after taking it to the TAC in the beginning of January, they brought up a few issues and things that we've decided to address. So we will likely be coming to the advisory committee more like March. And at that time, we'll also have a water rights discussion at the same time. It may make for a little bit of a long meeting, but we thought about separating the two items, but they really do warrant being talked about at the same time. So that's our plan for coming back to the advisory committee.
And I don't know, Jim, if you want to provide, were you at the TAC? My understanding is there was additional discussion on wanting to really gain an understanding of the potential impact on surplus water.
Right. I think that was the main issue, because it looks like the consultant assumed he had free rein to use our previously surplus water to make attraction flows and things like that. And so we asked them, I think, to go back and take another look at that because of the value of surplus water to all the agencies and try to preserve as much as that as they could. And there was one other point that I was a little bit concerned about myself, and that is that apparently there's some thinking that we should be guaranteeing a flow rate remote from the dam, for instance, at the Arroyo Grande gauge station. And I think that, at least so far as I can see it right now, I think that's a risky proposition, because we would be entertaining providing water for some future user that we don't know about.
And I especially concur on that second point. You know, we've had Anthony Spina here previously from National Marine Fisheries Service, and we asked him the question of how do we make sure that, you know, where's our responsibility end? And he had indicated that they would be working with individuals along the stream. Now, of course, when National Marine Fisheries Service says they're going to be working with people underneath a very strong regulatory power, not sure exactly what that means, but I agree with you, Mr. Gehring, that you know, when Zone 3 in the county makes releases out of the dam, there is very little control that, if any, you know, regarding uses right downstream. Both of those points, actually, on surplus water as well as, you know, a commitment for a live stream. My early discussion several years ago with staff of the State Water Board, they also indicated that. And I think part of the staff challenge at the State Water Board when it comes to the ultimate permitting that is going to happen for the reservoir and everything is that they still, you know, they're up in Sacramento and they see a lot of watersheds that have, you know, streams and creeks and rivers that flow year-round. And that's just not the case here. And so I think they've got a little bit of a challenge to get their heads around what our scenario is. But in any case, I'm glad to hear that the TAC is following up on some of those details.
I have the same recollection about Mr. Spina. I remember him appearing at a TAC meeting and indicating that he would work with the property owners downstream of the dam.
Mr. Waggy?
Just had a question or comment, too. With respect to, like, Pismo has formerly State Water, recharacterized as Lopez Water, the dam right now. I think you kind of addressed that. Would that be part of the calculations for downstream releases, so we could kind of lose that special treatment of that water? I mean, I'm just kind of raising the question, but it seems like that's something that would have to be handled carefully in the way we're doing things.
You know, Mark, you might be able to help out. I think that the water in storage, regardless of what the source is, really only comes into play when the reservoir levels get really low, in normal situations. But
as the HCP downstream release program has been developed over the years, there is a concept about downstream releases, both base flows and then this concept of attraction flows, which is the simulation of natural flow events, that those are in some way based on reservoir levels, backing up to how much water is in the reservoir. And I think one of the challenges coming up with the HCP is how to deal with the future, where agencies are now managing on a portfolio basis, and a particular agency may choose to use other sources, and under a renegotiated contract scenario, be storing water, whether Lopez or State Water, in the reservoir, such that the reservoir level doesn't actually match the local climate situation.
Right.
I mean, that's what's happening when you try to devise a downstream release program to mimic natural conditions. If the only inflows in the reservoir are from the watershed, and there's a regular use out of the reservoir by the agencies, you know, as water comes in, it's used, then you can use reservoir level as an indicator of what the climate's been like over the last 4 or 5 years. When you change up the way we operate the reservoir, which we might, to all of our benefits, then it's a different question. So all of that's got to be worked through, definitely, as to how all of that would work. Not impossible at all, because we measure the natural inflows to the reservoir as a matter of course, and so it may be just using shifting the triggers for downstream release and attraction flows to a different different set of numbers than actual storage. So we'll have to just work through those items, and that's where the TAC is rolling up their sleeves and launching into it.
Okay, I appreciate that. It just seems like there'd be a penalty for moving it from San Luis Reservoir to the Lopez Lake if it would be part of the calculation to release it downstream, mm-hmm. and your water, some of your water's gone. I don't know.
Right.
It's complicated.
But fun.
I'm glad you're having fun.
Well, yeah, I agree that if we're not careful, then we're at risk of getting sort of having a negative effect of bringing water from
right.
the state into a local watershed.
Right.
So an important point to make sure we have covered.
Thank you.
All right.
Any other questions, comments?
Just a mundane question, as always. Are we on budget and schedule?
For?
The HCP, if there is such a thing.
Our consultant, ECOR, we are on budget on schedule with ECOR, and H.T. Harvey. Of course, there's always the unknown of how the environmental agencies will, what kind of time they will take to respond.
Hence the, if there is such a thing.
Yes. Questions, comments from the public? And again, seeing none, we'll move on to item 8A, emergency water supply options, evaluation letter update. Mr. Hutchinson.
All right. So at the risk of repeating myself, we have secured board time on February 23rd, at least 2 hours. Unfortunately, I can't tell you whether that's morning or afternoon session. It's a decision made by the county administrator and the chairman of the board. And we're also rather limited in distributing any agenda materials until the printed agenda is actually out. But have been working on an email basis with representatives of all your agencies, trading ideas about scope and presentation and approach. We'll be finalizing that for the most part, how we're going to do it, and then start pulling it together within the next 2 weeks. So it looks like we will have a good presentation. There's general agreement across the board. This isn't going to be me standing up there talking for 2 hours, which I can do, but we've got all this expertise in the South County, and we want to make this very much a team approach to the presentation. And convey what really goes into the South County, not only to the Board of Supervisors, but a lot of people watch those meetings on the Internet. So it's important that folks understand that this group leads a coalition of cities and CSDs and farmers and whatever else to work together on these issues. So hoping for a good presentation. And I should say that at that time, we expect to do an update on the PG&E desal project. We will present it as part of the suite of emergency drought response or water supply options that are available to the South County and update to the board to the point at where we are. That depends, again, on where PG&E is with their part of the project. And then we would expect to be sometime in March, according to PG&E's information, with a much more detailed presentation on that project alone and for board action. But it will be part of the presentation on the 23rd.
I just want to give my thanks for all the work that the county staff and members of this committee have done on getting to the point where we are, where we've got some really good options being developed here. I appreciate that.
And I think some of the thanks is should go to Mr. English from Arroyo Grande as well. He's been definitely a leader on this effort. Thanks, Jeff. Any other questions, comments, concerns? Hearing none. And so actually, we don't have an this is not an action item for us today, but it's an update. Any members of the public? Again, seeing none. I think we're good then to move on to item 8B. So 8B is consideration of using Zone 3 reserves for drainage and flood control services. And Mark, are you going to take the lead on this one?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to ask Jill if she can bring up that PowerPoint that's on the bottom of your screen, and I'm going to see if I remember how to work HGP's.
F5.
What is that?
F5. There you go.
Ooh. This is actually a three-part item. I'm going to give you the project, a little bit about why we're here with this project, and then introduce the concept of more discussion on the larger issues. So let's just start with what the Carpenter Creek project is. Location very quickly. Carpenter Creek is an informal name. Meadow Creek, as you know, comes out of the Oak Park area with some tributaries past the Kmart and into Pismo Lake, which is in the upper right of that photo. Flows down under Highway 1 and right behind the Butterfly Grove. And then so it comes down this way. And then right at this point, Meadow Creek makes a left turn right around that mobile home right there and flows this way down behind Jill and eventually into the Oceano Lagoon. picks up drainage from Grand Avenue there. But there's an outlet to the ocean right here. That straight line is the top of the levee that separates what we call Carpenter Creek. Flows from here, and there it is trailing out. Separates Carpenter Creek from the North Beach Campground, which is a state park facility. That also happens to be right on the border between Grover Beach and the city of Pismo Beach, and all in state park lands. This is the Pismo Creek Lagoon there to the north. Colors faded out on this a little bit. This shaded area is the watershed, the Meadow Creek watershed. And so everyone's familiar with down here, Rio Grande and Grover Beach on this side and Oceano, a little bit of Pismo Beach up there, and then the watershed here going up Oak Park and Old Oak Park that way. All of the rainfall from this formerly drains all the way down into the Meadow Creek Lagoon, sometimes called Oceano Lagoon, through that twin barrel flap gates into Rio Grande Creek and out. As you can see, however, with Carpenter Creek at this point, we can collect the drainage from this part of the watershed and divert it directly into the ocean and hopefully assist with some of the flooding that goes along down in this neighborhood. Working with the state parks, this is what their trail crossing at Carpenter Creek looks like. So this photo is taken in the dry. Directly behind the photographer is the creek running behind them up to Highway 1 past the Butterfly Grove. Meadow Creek makes a left turn right where this person is standing. And we have this structure. The bottoms of these pipes are somewhere around 3 to 5 feet above the bottom of the creek. Then it has an overflow over the top and then drops about 5 feet on the other side and then out through the sandy area into the ocean. We're not sure of the date of this structure or of the intent. It was built by State Parks before any of the staff currently working there began to work there. We have some recent information that there may have been an idea that this would somehow keep wave run-up and high surf out of this area. We're doing a little survey work to see about that elevation. It is part of a system that State Parks has with some flap gates and a pump station to try to keep North Beach Campground from flooding. If you know anything about the history of that, it doesn't work. Their complaint is that the property on all four sides drains into their campground and not out. This might help this by flushing Carpenter Creek and potentially opening the sandbar a little bit earlier. But in any event, by increasing the capacity through this thing, these are 16, 8 inches, maybe 12-inch culverts. They're not big. By doing something with this so that most of the flow could go out to the ocean, we could keep that channel more clear and keep some water out of the Oceana Lagoon, at least until some long-term solution to that issue comes up. Right now the concept, and this is a little bit difficult to see with the light, same view, but is simply remove the pile of dirt in the culverts, which you can see shadowed right there, and install a new bridge. Part of this is expediency and permitting, and part of it is the physical conditions of construction. Because of this vegetation that's growing here and the access to this point, removing this is pretty much going to be done by hand with shovels and picks and wheelbarrows. We can't get anything in there. So this is a construction that we would do primarily a site-built bridge, and then work with State Parks to add State Park elements to the rail. And although their trail, the gradient of the trail is handicapped accessible, the bridge doesn't quite meet a handicap standard for wheelchairs and this would. So we're in conversations with them. They've expressed some concerns about surf run-up, and we'll address those with them. But this is a cooperative project between the Flood Control District and State Parks. In an effort to address some of the area-wide flooding in Oceano and along the way there, and perhaps even in the State Parks campground. The recommendation, then, out of your staff report, is that we use Flood Control Zone 3 district reserves to the tune of about $30,000 to do the permitting and construction on this. I'll back up. So, as you see in the staff report, financially this project doesn't have anything to do with the Lopez project. As explained there briefly, Zone 3 has existed since 1960s at least. It's collected an increment of property tax to benefit flood control activities in the zone. Up until the year 2000, that money was used generally for whatever the needs of Zone 3 were. After 2000, when those contracts were revised, the district agreed to take any new property tax collected within Zone 3 and apply it to debt service, general obligation bonds for the Lopez project itself. And then the Lopez project itself, funded again by your agencies and with Zone 3 property tax. I say Zone 3 property tax, by the way. That money is not legally restricted to Zone 3. There is a tax increment in Zone 3 that goes to the project, but the general portion of the 1% countywide property tax isn't, but traditionally up to 2000 was, and after 2000, per the contracts, we dedicate all of that to debt service. All of that to say that this account, district reserves, is accruing a little bit of funding from rent. I'm not sure what that is in interest, but no property tax input into it. And it's been there since 2000 and was projected at $2.9 million at the end of next year, a little bit less for this year. One question, it wouldn't be shown in next year's budget because this project is proposed again for this fiscal year. It will also be funded out of this fiscal year. So it brings up the question, and a lot of people watching might wonder, if this has nothing to do with the Lopez project, which is what we traditionally talk about and have been talking about this meeting, why are we here? Because of the bylaws. This is an expert's right out of your staff report. I highlight those two phrases about the purpose, responsibility, and authority of this committee. Not only is it water contractors, but it's also residents and property owners in Zone 3, and then farther down, not only water contractors, residents, agriculture, and property owners in Zone 3. So we believe there's a clear intent, and there's some precedent set from other projects, that this committee advises the Board of Supervisors about all things in Flood Control Zone 3, not just the water project. There's a lot of detail in the bylaws and in the contracts about the water project, not so much on everything generally. I would add, too, as we pointed out in the staff report, Zone 1 of the Flood Control District, which is the levee project and arguably the most serious flooding issue in the South County, is wholly contained within Zone 3. So we don't think there's an intent to, you know, override Zone 1. But because Zone 1 and that advisory committee handles the big flooding issue, the Zone 3 committee is pretty much focused on the water project. But here we have an example of a project that could benefit, well, the project itself is located outside of Zone 1. It benefits some of the folks in Zone 1 in a way that's not in conflict with their assessment, if that's too much information. So we're here at the advisory committee first on this project, to suggest that it's appropriate to use that general zone-wide property tax that's not dedicated to debt service on the water project to fund an actual flood control project. And our intent on this is to make this happen in short order. But again, just a map there, put this together pretty quickly, but you can see there are areas of Zone 1 that are outside of the areas served by the water project, or Zone 3. Certainly to the south and then up the Arroyo Grande Valley and all the way to the dam. So the zone itself, from a wider perspective for what the Flood Control District does have a relationship, we believe, to this committee. So this is the last slide, and it's kind of the third topic of the three. The idea that maybe there needs to be a discussion at this committee about that wider role and how that might benefit the community, and how this committee could serve as a sounding board and a well-informed advisory body on many issues beyond those that are directly related to the water project. And I just threw some things up there. How does Zone 3 and Zone 1 work together in that kind of an environment? Are we going to be limited to the $2.8, $2.9 million that's currently available? The bonds are financed out to 2030 for the property tax income, so that's a consideration of how that works. But at the same time, and I didn't put this on the slide, as we thought about this issue, I've been concerned about this topic for about the last year now, as I've been meeting with different groups in the South County about all kinds of different water issues. One of the examples is most everyone here, as a matter of fact, all of these representatives are also involved in NCMA, which is an outgrowth of the adjudication of the groundwater basin. I've met with landowners in the Rio Grande Valley about the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. That won't apply to the adjudicated area, but applies to the areas of the basin outside of the adjudication. Pismo Valley, Rio Grande Valley, Napomo Valley, and the fringe along Highway 166 down there in the south. Nicole was here talking about urban stormwater and stormwater resource plans. The interesting thing about all of that is when we have these meetings and talk about these issues, all of the same people show up. And it was really emphasized in a meeting that we had talking about Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, SGMA, with the landowners. I think Brian was there. Most of the city's public works staff and planning staff was there. And as I walked through with my maps to this group of folks over in Arroyo Grande City Council chambers about what our SGMA responsibilities were going to be in the South County, there were a lot of slumped shoulders, a lot of exhausted people, a lot of frowns about, yeah, here's another set of meetings, here's another set of acronyms. So just to throw it out there, as this committee discusses its larger role within Zone 3, it has occurred to me that we might be able to be a lot more efficient with our discussions and our advice to the board if we take more advantage of those bylaws and what this committee's role could be. So I'll bring it back around again, though. The recommendation for today is whether or not this committee would recommend to the board that they draw on that district-funded reserves, the $2.9 million for $30,000 to expedite the Carpenter Creek project.
Thanks, Mark. And I want to kind of speak a little bit to approach here because we have a specific recommendation on a specific project. Mark referenced the bylaws section 1 and 3. I'm looking at bylaw section 2, which states, the committee shall be responsible for reviewing proposed additions to, changes in, or extension or deletion of services. And so to the extent that we're talking about a project that's going to be a new service of Zone 3, i.e. a flood control type of drainage project, that question itself is a very broad one. Do we believe that it's appropriate to use Zone 3 reserves for something other than the, you know, the traditional water supply associated with the Lopez project? And I think that if we just take the recommendation and in the event we were to support it, then we're basically saying that we support, you know, broader services associated with flood control and drainage type of projects. I think that that bigger question then can also be brought into the context of what Nicole and the RCD are looking at and the possibility of some of the matching for a stormwater resource plan. And I know that in some of the early discussions that I've had with Public Works, there is some, you know, willingness to discuss that item. And certainly I think that's important to discuss a little bit more at this point in time as well. So I want to talk in one hand about the specific project, but then also on the other hand about the bigger and the broader purposes. And then we have this question about, you know, the property tax money and these property tax reserves. And so what Mark was explaining was that those property tax money that sits in the reserves from Zone 3 are truly discretionary to the Board of Supervisors. We pay for costs associated with operating the Lopez contracts, but property tax money is basically a discretionary item to whomever the governing board is, whether it's, you know, property tax received by Oceano or any of the other municipalities. The governing bodies can do with it as they so choose. And so on the broader purpose, I think it warrants, with a significant amount in those Zone 3 reserves, to what extent does this advisory committee want to get more involved in how those might be used to a greater public purpose? And I think the greater public purpose is what we really need to focus on, because when we have contracts and Lopez water supply agreements, then that money has to be specifically spent on what the contracts call for. But these Zone 3 reserves, which have gone largely untouched since 2000, they've been used for a variety of purposes, but still the vast majority of them have gone untouched. And do we think that it would be good to use them for broader public purposes like drainage and flood control, stormwater resource plans, and those kind of things? So I want to make sure to cover both of those points, but before going any further, I want to make sure to open it up to questions and comments from committee members.
There you go. Mr. I guess Chairman. I'll start off. Okay. Speaking to the specific project.
Probably going to want you to speak.
All right. Speaking to the specific project, I simply do not see a relationship to Zone 3
with this particular work. This is a culvert replacement, and it doesn't seem to have anything to do with water supply or protecting the water supply, the water distribution system, or the lake. You know, we have put off for quite a number of years a culvert project that actually does have a relationship to water supply and protecting our water supply, and that is, if you think about the terminal reservoir, you know, Orchid Road crosses the terminal reservoir, and where Orchid Road crosses the terminal reservoir, there is a there are two drain inlets at a low point. And so if a an agricultural truck, for instance, has an accident there and spills 500 gallons of pesticide, it goes into the terminal reservoir. And so we've long thought that we need to replace that culvert and direct any drainage that gets to that roadway into the northern part of the terminal reservoir so it won't affect our water supply. If they came to us with a project like that, I would say, boy, that looks like a good project to consider. And in looking at the broader picture of things, that would be one I'd be inclined to include. As far as the specific project, again, it's out of order from my perspective. It needs to go to TAC. It needs to be considered to be included in the budget and taken through the regular process. I think it might have a pretty rough time at TAC, by the way. but given that, that would be the direction I would say would have to be taken for this particular project. We do need to discuss those Zone 3 reserves and what we're going to do with them. There are a lot of good things we could do with them. But I don't see replacing a culvert on Carpenter Creek as one of them, frankly. I'm kind of curious why the county's involved. That's state park property, or it's Lesage Riviera. And I would mention, though, by the way, is just some history. When I was an 18-year-old kid, I did the compaction testing on Lesage Riviera, and that channel out to the ocean was graded as part of that work in coordination with the state in about 1962. From the perspective of water supply, replacing that culvert so it flows more easily and lowers the lagoon, for instance, from the sole perspective of water supply and ignoring flooding, that has a negative impact in my view, because lowering the lagoon elevation lowers our protection against seawater intrusion. So I like to keep the lagoon high from an NCMA perspective, at least from a Northern Cities Management area perspective. Not that I would say that this would have a significant effect on it, but that's the kind of thing we need to think about if we're going to modify structures in that part of the watershed. This would be a new service in my view, and I think given those reserves, we ought to talk about new services and what we want to do, but we would be sure jumping the gun in my view to approve this project without doing that first. So that's it.
As I say, this is one of those items that I would have to abstain from based upon our prior discussion, but I can kind of echo a little bit of what Jim's saying with just to add one little piece of information regarding the benefit of that AVLA gets from this project. If this project did go forward as a Zone 3, there is much of the reserves. Obviously, they don't have representation here this evening. It's part of Zone 12, but they might question the use of this money without any direct benefit from them. Just an ancillary item there. Just a logistical question for Mr. Hutchinson, is $30,000 the entire cost of the project?
Yeah, that's what we have. Yes, that's what the budget for the entire project is.
Okay, so this would be the sole funding source for the project then?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, thank you. So then going to the second point with regards to kind of either reinterpreting or a reevaluation of the the entities of Zone 3 of our responsibilities. I can support having that broader discussion. Would probably like to have a discussion with my own council first to see. I'm sure there's be questions with regards from staff and so forth as to how they interpret that, and then making sure that that all that gets brought back as part of the discussion. But I'm supportive of having that discussion.
I guess maybe a question to ask Mark is, did you mean to say that Zone 3 potentially could be the entity that would allow, I guess, compliance with SGMA in the unadjudicated part of our basin?
Well, the question that comes up, at least for the unadjudicated part that's in Zone 3, is... what is an advisory committee's role in all of that, in advising the Board of Supervisors? What's going to be the relationship with what the state requires, which is a groundwater sustainability agency, which is, again, a duplication of the same staff people? How do we handle all of that? And we're suggesting that that might be part of the discussion. And at the base, I guess, the base of the question is, on those larger issues, what role does this committee want to have in advising the Board of Supervisors when the board sets as the flood control district, how they should proceed in the South County with all of these issues and initiatives that we're bound to respond to?
Well, I guess as one of those people at the meeting with the slumped shoulders and just kind of, you know, as a business person and trying to comply and, you know, deal with, you know, it seems like unending layers of bureaucracy, I'm very much in favor of trying to come up with the most efficient, effective approach to comply. As far as the project that we have in front of us, as a farmer, you know, I look at that, and there are two, you know, small culverts there. It looks like it would work a lot better if the water could flow through there unimpeded. But I'm not quite sure who should pay for that.
Just going to respond, first of all, to the broader question of our role and responsibilities of on what we're going to be doing here. It seemed like with all the new initiatives that you alluded to coming down from the state, I think somebody's got to deal with it, and especially with respect to taxpayer dollars, I think all of us are very protective of those dollars, and I haven't talked to my council, obviously, but I would generally be in favor of us participating in these deliberations because of the future impacts that are coming down the pike. With respect to SGMA and those kinds of questions, I'm not prepared to say, yeah, that's a good idea for this committee to do it, but for starters, maybe we should at least continue looking at that. With respect to the culvert issue, I guess my reaction was a couple things. It seems like I agree with Mr. Garion that this probably should have gone to the TAC first, and secondly, why isn't State Parks funding this? A third comment, I guess, is I understand this originally, that the outflow was through where the culvert is, and historically Meadow Creek came through that channel and not down to the lagoon. But now with that culvert, I guess that way it's set up now, it flows the other way. I remember seeing some photos from the 30s or something that showed water flowing down the old Meadow Creek channel, not down to the lagoon. Is that your understanding too, historically?
I have to check on that. Interestingly, we did find with another project the 1893, what's called the T sheet, precedes USGS topographic maps. And what's interesting about that is that Meadow Creek and Pismo Creek and all of the cities all flow into the Oceano Lagoon along with the Rio Grande Creek and join in a dune lake. And it,
I may have misremembered,
flows out to the ocean where Pier Avenue is right now. So it's a very highly modified system over the years.
And the channels may have changed over the years, too, depending on what the climate was at the time. Well, on that issue, as I say, I'm concerned about It seems like the benefit is to the people living around Oceana Lagoon. And are there other ways of protecting them from flooding in that area?
Well, we have a couple of plans in place. One of them has set an emergency plan to attempt to get permits on an emergency basis to lower the sandbar if that was necessary. But the reality is, for that area, there are predictable conditions where there is no sandbar, but with a storm running and a high tide and a Rio Grande Creek flowing, the area will simply flood. There's no feasible, financiable, reasonable way to get the water out. So what this project is, the genesis of this project, it's one of a number of projects that the district's identified, both in county roads and the flood control district and in cooperation with other folks, that need to be done in advance of a wet weather situation. And you know, for discussion's sake, I should reiterate that it's been emphasized to me by our finance staff, who's up on these details, that this funding, although it is, can't remember the word, segregated when it comes to the county and labeled Zone 3, it is no more legally allocated to Zone 3 than similar funds that come from Zone 9. So there's a certain, when we say on the, now traditionally, it was kept within Zone 3. So it's difficult from a flood control district perspective to say, well, this is Zone 3 money, this is Zone 9 money, this is, because we collect a, that district collects a portion of the 1% property tax from every property in the county, pools the money, and then identifies the most critical projects, wherever they may be and whether they're flood control or water projects, and then implements those projects, generally under a board supervisor's policy.
Right. It's administrative segregation, not legal.
Right. And we do have to admit that some of that money is in that fund and was collected from properties that do not get water service from Lopez Lake. So there's some thinking there that perhaps would be appropriate to put a small portion of that money to step in and simply get the project done. The fact that it is in the state parks and who has been concerned about it for years and has been unable to get it through their process at Sacramento is not surprising. So it's not an important consideration, not a county project, but a flood control district project.
Right.
Because the flood control district's jurisdiction extends into all of these properties and streams.
Well, as I mentioned, I would prefer this to go to the TAC first. Is there a time constraint? You're trying to get it done this season or something?
Yes, we're trying to get some kind of approval from State Park and get it done as soon as possible. Back to the lagoon, at least the reference to the Oceano Lagoon, the concern there is that normal water, what we would consider normal, in that lagoon is an elevation of 8.5 feet above sea level. A high lagoon, per our emergency plan, is 9 feet. Which is where we're at today. And at 10.3 feet, we have water in houses. There is no flexibility in that lagoon as far as floodwaters. So we're at a point where anything we can do to divert water away, and especially divert a peak flow because of the relationship between Rio Grande and Meadow Creek Lagoon, is critically important.
I would like to point out one small thing is not only do I, I'm also intimately involved with Meadow Creek and the Oceano and flooding in that area, and that is that the runoff, if we consider where is this runoff coming from, it's generated by all the cities and the upper areas, Pismo, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande. The water and the runoff that's developed over the years ends up in Oceano. And so when somebody said, well, what could we do to prevent some of this flooding? And some of that is to have those upper areas capture their runoff, which sort of leads to what Nicole has brought before you. So in some ways, the while you're looking at Zone 3 and does it really have a nexus, I see a nexus in that Zone 3 is made up of all these communities, and it's the runoff from all the various communities that is, you know, ends up in Oceano Lagoon. And so this project is a way of sort of taking some of that out to the ocean a little sooner.
Maybe then if my approach might be then if this committee decides, if we, I know we have one dissent right now, but if this committee decide to move forward, maybe we condition upon the TAC also approving it moving forward. I don't know if time is of the essence, and I think you do make a good point that some of the taxpayer dollars are collected from folks not people who are benefited by the dam. So, looks like Mr.
Any
Morton
other
comment
comments?
Too.
I want to make sure to get all of our comments and make some myself as well.
I'm not certain what the what the border between Zone 1-1A and Zone 3 as projected in this discussion is, but the certainly the potential flooding of the South County Wastewater Treatment Plant would be an issue related around this discussion, and possibly I would see, you know, obvious benefit to the various communities to prevent that. So this sounds like something that would have benefit, and I think the discussion needs to be had, whether it's a Zone 3 sponsored discussion or not. But I think that's a very valuable discussion to have.
I agree. And so my comments are sort of multiple. One is that you know, it is clear that these reserves themselves are, you know, clearly discretionary to the Board of Supervisors. The precedence has already been set where, for example, in Zone 9, which covers the San Luis Creek watershed, some of that money the Board of Supervisors moved over to help with some of the flooding in Zone 1-1A after 2010 in order to address some of those issues. So the fiscal reality of the flood control district is such that in responding to the needs, sometimes this money does need to be moved around. Zone 3 itself is sort of fortunate. It's the single operation that has a subsidy of the ongoing tax revenues. The Nacimiento project, now that the agencies are looking at fully subscribing it, will have no such subsidy that we enjoy here. So there's a certain amount of recognition of the challenges that the flood control district has in trying to address overall needs. I think that, you know, the point that the entire watershed is contributing to flooding, and, you know, I'm kind of curious of whether or not this particular project might reduce impacts of flooding along Highway 1 and Pismo Beach as well, because we certainly know that we've seen that historically. I don't know technically what the answer to that is. But in some ways, you know, we're either, our areas are either contributing to the problem or we're the impact area. But the need to be able to address things on a greater watershed basis is certainly necessary. The fact that the sand district plant, you know, which is there for three of our agencies, is smack dab in the middle of the floodplain of Zone 1 and 1A should help us all motivate to try to figure out how to deal with these flooding problems. With respect to the question on the delineation of the boundaries, Zone 1 and 1A is essentially the 100-year floodplain, and it's wholly within Zone 3 also. So Zone 3 overlaps, and Zone 1 and 1A is just the floodplain area. I recognize that there's some principal concerns that members of the advisory committee have in terms of, you know, review by the TAC and the timing of the project, and should the flood control district really even be paying for this as opposed to state parks. But at the same time, it's a, you know, when we put it into the context of a larger project, I'm not inclined, and maybe I'll be the odd person out, to sort of stop a $30,000 project when, in the grand scheme of $2.9 million or whatever it is in reserves. It's really not a significant expenditure. And I think it gives us the opportunity to support the county in a small way and then turn around and create some expectations in a larger way. And those expectations are that I do think that the opportunity through the stormwater resource plan that Nicole was talking about, one, will have benefits to all of our agencies, all of our agencies except for Oceano, because Oceano does not have drainage and flood control powers as authorized by LAFCO. The challenge that my board of directors has, though, is that when flooding happens in Oceano, we still have residents and property owners who come to the board and say, what are you going to do about it? And without any real powers to deal with it, our board is, you know, obviously always in a situation of shrugging their shoulders. And I think that a more regional approach on the watershed and through Zone 3, it's good for many reasons. As Nicole had mentioned in the Stormwater Resource Plan, it can help address some of the regulatory challenges that the various agencies are going to have to address. It will help make sure that all the agencies qualify for grant projects in the future in terms of drainage and flood control. Now, I think it's quick to recognize that that benefit to some of the agencies is going to be greater than to other agencies. Some agencies may be able to develop the functional equivalent of a stormwater resource plan relatively easily and therefore qualify for grants in the future. Other agencies may have more work to do. But when we talk about property tax revenues in a broader public purpose, I think that the hardest thing that local agencies are finding to fund are drainage and flood control projects. And so I think that this watershed approach or our approach under NCMA is going to be especially important. And I would hate to lose an opportunity to move forward on something. Now, furthermore, with respect to not just the municipalities, I see benefits associated with our agricultural stakeholders. Because we know right now that in Zone 1 and 1A, the levee system, even after the $6 or $9 million waterway management plan that's in the permitting process gets constructed, the levees still will be they're not going to be certified, they're not going to be able to handle 100-year storms, and everybody recognizes that when those heavy storm flows do come, that the levees or the flows in that creek are going to exceed the capacity of the levees at some point in time. And the idea is that the excess flows need to go to the farmland in order to protect the urban development and to protect the mobile home parks. So the concept of a stormwater resource plan is that how is it that we make sure that those excess flows during storm events goes to beneficial purposes like groundwater recharge? That's going to require a fair amount of work with our agricultural community in the Zone 1 and 1A. They know the risks, they know the impacts, and the question becomes, what are we going to do about it? So I see this opportunity for the stormwater resource plans to start moving in that direction. In summary, you know, this property tax money, and it's really under the authority of the Board of Supervisors. I understand there's questions and concerns about the specific project in front of us, but in the grand scheme of things, I'm inclined to support it, and that support goes hand in hand with I would like to see Public Works and the county support the development of a stormwater resource plan with some matching funds, not all the matching funds coming out of here, but the matching funds that would be necessary to help with Arroyo Grande Creek and its watershed. The other group that we met with was the Arroyo Grande Creek MOU group, the watershed group, which was originally spearheaded several years ago through the RCD and through the city of Arroyo Grande. And I'll have that on Oceano's agenda. It's not a formal in terms of action oriented, but it's that, you know, consortium of people who are trying to address watershed issues. So I'm going to bring that to Oceano CSD's board to get them to approve, you know, that general participation in the MOU group. But I think that the challenge right now is timing, both on the project here as well as on the stormwater resource plan. And sometimes we're just faced with those kind of timing challenges. But I would hate to, you know, lose the opportunity to move forward on some of this stuff. and the flooding and the drainage issues and how to capture it and promote groundwater recharge are all some of the big issues that we're going to be facing, and I'm more inclined to support it from a policy standpoint and hope that we can move forward. That's my kind of take on it. And
Mr. Chairman, I've given the discussion we've just had, especially about South County Sanitary, and as Ms. Ogren said, the additional storm runoff from the cities, I think it does serve a public purpose for the benefit of people in Zone 3, so I'm prepared to support it. Given the time frame, we need to move on it right away rather than send it back to the TAC, which would have been preferable. If we need to move on it so this the El Nino potential flooding can be averted, I'm prepared to support it.
Mr. Horton, did you want to speak to the issue?
Thanks, Bob. Wade Horton, County Public Works. I certainly appreciate the discussion, the different points of view on this project. We talked about the bylaws today in regards to number three. The committee's authority is that of a leadership, advocacy, and guidance regarding the needs and desires of water contractors, residents, agriculture, and property owners in Zone 3. There's been some mention of bureaucracy tonight, and this is certainly a project that we've worked very closely with State Parks to get to this point, to where we can actually start and build a project expediently and make a difference to protect health and safety downstream. So I appreciate the conversation and the discourse, and I would hope that you would take a look at this project as something that we can do to immediately alleviate the flooding problem in that area. Thank you.
I'm going to make sure to provide an opportunity for many members of the public, and seeing none, bring it back to the committee for further discussion, possible motions. And
Mr. Chairman, if I could, we have two non-voting members, but I think even though they're non-voting, they have a huge stake here. I guess I'd like to hear where they are at before we make a motion to bring it to a vote. So I'd be happy to hear their input.
Obviously, I've not brought this before the Aurora Grande City Council, but I would need to do that. But I believe that that there is an overarching public purpose here to prevent flooding there in that area, with the potential impact on the sanitation district plant and the local residents in Oceano as well. The flooding along Highway 1 in Pismo Beach was mentioned, but I think there's ample nexus here for us to consider this, so I tend to look favorably upon it.
So, and I'll echo those comments. I did have an opportunity to talk with our staff before the meeting, and while they would have preferred that it go through the TAC process as well, in concept, there was support from staff for that. Again, I haven't talked with any other council members with regards to this, but from a Zone 3 perspective, it does start to broaden that conversation in accordance with the bylaws. With regards to flood control, it's an obvious benefit to the area in general. So short answer would be supportive, prefer to have gone through the TAC, and since the TAC is 2 weeks from now, that's going to actually be ample time before it actually gets to the board. Is that correct? So perhaps the TAC could review it just for overall thumbs up, thumbs down, or prioritization in advance of it going to the board. So
I guess I'm wondering how that really works. Then are we supposed to have a special meeting or something?
Well, I think that referral back to the TAC is, appropriate. I think that I would not. I think the decision and the action is really for the Zone 3 Advisory Committee tonight.
And I agree with that.
Yeah. So I think that, engaging the TAC further, just as I believe that the TAC needs to be engaged further on this concept of the stormwater resource plan, but I want to take these items sort of one at a time, first specifically on this particular project recommendation.
And actually, if I could add one other item, if I might, is I appreciate actually Public Works bringing it to us tonight and actually it being on the agenda, because from what I'm hearing is because of the segregation of the funding and so forth, they really didn't need to do that. So if I'm kind of reading below the line there, it's like, yes, it's Zone 3 reserves, but technically it's not Zone 3 reserves, and so the ability to have input on it is appreciated, so but not wholly necessary, if I'm...
I think the bylaws compel them to take it here. Mm-hmm. From a sort of a legal perspective, no, they wouldn't be required to take it
right.
To Zone 3. But even beyond the bylaws, it's sort of the protocol that when we have advisory committees, we bring guidance to them. So,
which even though I'm a county employee, I think this is an opportunity for Public Works and the county in general to do that communicative outreach, that leadership that they have, where, who knows, at some point or another county would have gone, these are our reserves, we get to do with them what we want. But here they're having the outreach so we can have this conversation. So it's... And, perhaps I'm muddying that issue, but I think the ability for us to input is great. But even if we did say no, I think there would still be an opportunity for flood control or the county to move forward with this under an emergency project aspect.
More discussion?
Just a couple of final comments. The appropriate funding agency would be 1A.
No, it's Zone 3. The project itself is outside the boundaries of Zone 1 and 1A. It's within the boundaries of Zone 3.
It's in the 100-year flood zone.
Hmm. Oh, well, the Zone 1 and 1A, the 100-year flood zone immediately around Rio Grande Creek. Maybe Mark would like to speak to that.
I just wanted to clarify that the assessments collected Zone 1 and 1A are very specific for maintenance and operation of the levee system that exists there.
Okay, and then the last thing would be approval of the project, specific project, without going through the process of going through TAC, putting it in the budget, so forth, for a project that clearly has nothing to do with Lopez Lake or the water transmission system or treatment system. Potentially sets a precedent and exposes the rest of the $2.9 million for other such projects in the future.
Well, I would certainly I agree, and yet from another perspective, the risk that we would have is that there would be a budget proposal to transfer those entire reserves out of Zone 3 and into Flood Control General, in which case we would have no ability to try to sway the county on how to use that money. So I think that what, you know, timing is bad, and I think that Public Works has probably had a little bit of discussion on that timing internal to the department and, you know, on their timing issues and stuff, and just leave it at that. I think that it's fair for us to have the expectation that these items are anticipated and brought forward sooner, but I also think that it's fair to have the expectation that the Zone 3 budget include anything on a normal basis that might relate to, you know, the watershed and drainage and flood control projects, so that we all have the opportunity to look at them, make sure that we agree with the priorities. If this was a $300,000 proposal, you know, my stance tonight would be completely different than a $30,000 proposal. But I, enough said on that point.
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to make a motion. This is further comments on this. Chairman, I move that we recommend that we endorse the Carpenter Creek Channel Improvements Project, including the funding from Flood Control Zone 3 reserves in the amount of $30,000.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, might be advisable for a roll call vote.
Member Waggy?
Yes.
Chairperson Ogren?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Member Gehring?
No.
So motion passes on a 3-1 vote.
Yes.
So the second part, and Jim, I definitely recognize, you know, your principle on this issue, and I have no disagreement with that. You know, Nicole came and gave us a presentation on this development of a stormwater resource plan, And there's going to be a one-time opportunity to try to produce grant, try to pursue grant money on that. And that particular item is a lot harder to try to structure in the context of this meeting and what the advisory committee might want to do. But I do see that there's an opportunity here, and I see it as an opportunity in pursuing a stormwater resource plan to be able to address a number of different issues in the watershed. Regulatory requirements that are coming up through the regional board and affecting all the municipalities, you know, the Arroyo Grande Creek flood flows and how that might impact farmland in the future, how to enhance stormwater recharge into the groundwater basin. But I'm not sure how, you know, the advisory committee might want to address that. One approach would be, you know, to try to get the staff of the different agencies together, come up with a plan on how to apply for the grant money for the plan, convene a special meeting of Zone 3 and see if use of reserves for a portion of the matching would be supported. Another approach would be to sort of do the rounds with the various agencies governing bodies. But I do think that in terms of dealing with stormwater and this paradigm shift from a nuisance and getting it out to the ocean as fast as possible and to address it as a resource is an important shift that we're seeing in California. And to follow up on that, that shift is also taking place in another front, and that's Proposition 218. Because for several years, many people throughout California have recognized that Proposition 218 makes a very significant challenge in trying to figure out how to flood, fund drainage and flood control projects. And in early years, there was a discussion about, well, how do we modify Prop 218? Because water, we can go through and set rates and charges. It's only subject to a protest hearing. We can do the same thing with our sewer rates and charges. But when it comes to flood control or drainage-related projects, those avenues under Prop 218 aren't available. So many people in the state have been trying to address that. And the latest shift has not to affect the constitutional provisions associated with Prop 218, but instead to affect the constitutional definition of stormwater and to move it away from, you know, a nuisance and move it into a resource so that it can fall underneath the water definitions of Prop 218. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing some significant efforts in California to, again, change the paradigm on how we look at stormwater and to view it as a resource as opposed to as a nuisance. But that's a lot, you know, to try to consider in a meeting like tonight real quickly. So I'm interested in how other committee members might think we might want to approach that, especially considering the time constraints we're facing.
I agree. I think it's a broad policy discussion, and at some point we probably want to go back to our governing bodies, our councils and CSDs to see, to get their input too. But I think we do need to address it some fashion, just because of the, as you say, the paradigm shift with the way we're treating stormwater. If I could go back, though, Mr. Chairman, to my previous motion, I didn't state so, but I think it's, at least in my opinion, it's the committee's intent that this issue of the Meadow Creek, Carpenter Creek channel would be discussed for technical input by the TAC, not for approval, just for technical input to make sure that whatever's done is going to be as done as well as we can. But on the issue of the policy role, I think, yes, a special meeting might be needed because of all the we're opening up a much larger mandate for this committee, and I think we need to have some bounds on where we're going to go and develop some direction. I know the staff has plenty of time to work on these things, so that shouldn't be a problem. I'm being facetious. I know you guys are very busy, and but I think we have to bite the bullet and address these issues, which you're obviously bringing up too, and certainly look for the staff input as to what's feasible as far as how we can bring something together.
I'll echo those comments with the addition of it could have a dramatic effect on how the budget is put together as well, because if we're going to start to discuss where some of those funds are coming from, it could impact the required funding reserves for the plant and for the actual water delivery system overall. And so if we start to switch where those funds are allocated or earmarked for, I want to make sure that we don't start to forget about not that we're going to forget, but that we don't lose sight of the main mission of what Zone 3 does.
I guess I'm thinking that we need a discussion in the not too distant future about the reserve fund, because my recollection is that there's some logic to setting the amount of the reserves related to the kind of emergencies it has to address. And so that's the kind of thing we need to keep in mind if we're going to be parsing out this money to other projects.
And if I could mention, too, when you referred earlier to this other situation where the intake near the holding, on the technical terms, but the area where the intake is for the holding pond.
Terminal reservoir.
Right. Thank you. If that is an issue that is something we should be talking about too, to ensure prevent some catastrophic impact on our water supply. That seems like that could be part of it too. I appreciate your bringing that up.
And going back with just a little bit of history, as I take tonight's hat off and put my former utility hat back on, there is a project that was actually preliminarily designed, funded through Prop 50 for that very project. Mm-hmm. And then the state said, oh, oops, we've over-allocated ourselves and effectively took the money back. Otherwise, that project probably would have been done by now. So there is actually a project to protect those culverts.
And I think the important point on SB 385 or 395 is that if we want to pursue grant funding for those kind of projects in the future, we have to have a stormwater resource plan adopted.
I guess, Jim, I'd like a little clarity on your last comment. I mean, are you concerned that reserve funds are going to be used, as part of the match for a special project?
I'm actually not concerned about that so much as I'm starting now to get a little bit worried that we're going to be using portions of a fund that might be needed for a major emergency in the future. If we have a big earthquake, which actually not if, but when we have a big earthquake, that treatment plant could be badly damaged and we might need to spend $2 or $3 million to get it going again. And we're going to need the money if that happens.
Or maybe we'll just bypass it.
Maybe.
I think Mr. Gehring's point is well taken, though, is that in any time that we're looking at any operation, what kind of reserves do we need to have in contingencies for that rainy day or the earthquake day, whichever comes. Hopefully the rainy day comes first. But
As background, you remember we seismically remediated Lopez Dam. And before the San Simeon earthquake occurred, the dam was finished. The original design for the dam called for it to withstand about 0.2 Gs of horizontal acceleration, and we got that at the dam from that earthquake. But we multiplied the strength of the dam 5 times in the interim, and so we survived all right. But there will be another earthquake.
Well, that's part of the great history of Lopez Dam, right, is that its original construction was completed just in time for the 1969 floods,
right.
And it captured a lot of that water and prevented massive downstream flooding. And then the seismic remediation project was finished just months before
just
the San Simeon earthquake, which was the fault that was designed. So
right.
I guess we probably don't have any further action tonight on this item, but my sense of the discussion is that I've already, started working with Nicole and the regional board in order to try to say, is there an approach for this grant application that might be competitive? And we're going to get together next week again, started an outreach with staff of the various agencies and see who can engage in that process. And then if we can get a plan together and get some good recommendations together, and working with, if the support comes from the county as well, then we'll plan on scheduling a special meeting. If that's generally okay with everybody.
Works for me. The farmers will show up.
You know, I like it when they do, because I'm always hungry about this time of night.
Okay.
Moving on to item 9, future agenda items. Does anybody on the committee wish to discuss any of those items?
I guess we need to send the reserve issue to TAC and start from there.
Yes. Yeah.
So you would like me to add reserve issue?
Yeah, when's the... Yes, please. When's the next time the TAC is set to meet?
February. If I had a calendar, it's the first Thursday in February. 4th. I was going to say that.
Okay.
First Thursday, February 4th? Should be on my calendar.
And I can put that on their agenda.
Okay. As well as the stormwater resource plan.
Okay.
Yeah. Any...
And the Meadow Creek Diversion Channel Project?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The two of them, yeah.
Item number 12, committee member comments. Any last comments to wrap up?
Just one comment from my end. Has actually nothing to do with Zone 3, but in case you're not aware, the Grover City Manager is on the verge of retiring.
Oh.
So his last official date is March 1st. Mm. His last official date in the office is February 16th, so which happens to actually be a council meeting night. So we are going to have a reception that evening. He doesn't want to do anything formal or anything like that, so we're going to try and embarrass him at the council meeting for a little bit at least. We will have probably some presentations, and it will be a public opportunity to eat cake, so come join us.
And to express a job well done.
Exactly. Yep.
Any other last comments? Seeing none, we're adjourned. Thank you. And our next meeting is March. I'm not sure the date. Next regular meeting, March
17th.
March
17th, and
where
perhaps
green?
A special meeting.
Oceano.
In the meanwhile, in Oceano.
You know where that is?
I do. You know, we might have new carpeting soon.
Ooh.
You know, we had the short...
Well, that was good.
Yeah, nobody from Oceano showed up, so we had to have a new carpeting.